Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, I'm Dr. Z, and I'm a neurosurgeon. So that means long hours, early rounds, late nights, and everything in between. And through it all, I wear Figs. Because they're built for what I do. Through the chaos, through the hours, and through whatever the day throws at me, they do their job so I can do mine. They're comfortable when it counts, and functional when I need them the most. So where do you wear your Figs? On shift, on call, on the couch in the break room, listening to this podcast? Wherever it is, they fit right in. And now listeners of this podcast can get 15% off their first order. Just head to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX at checkout. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.
Welcome back to another episode of Peter's Proffer here in the courtroom of current events. Really excited about today's episode. We get asked a lot what community organizations we're involved in. We've had some people on from some in the past, and we've got the founder and the CEO of the Homeless Emergency Project here today. It is an organization in Clearwater that a ton of corporate sponsors are involved in. A ton of individuals are involved volunteering and giving to this organization. It does a lot to help the homelessness in Clearwater. They focus on children and families and vets. It's a really awesome organization. We're going to get to dive into what they do, what events they have, and how you can become a part of it as well. So as always, if you want to hear about a specific topic or want to hear from a certain guest, find us on Facebook, find us on Instagram, at Tragos Law. You can also send me an email, as always, petertragos@greeklaw.com. All right, so we're actually here with the founder of the Homeless Emergency Project and the CEO of the newly named and rebranded, I guess, the Homeless Empowerment Project. So why don't you guys introduce yourself, talk about the name change, when did it happen, why did it happen, and we can kind of go from there.
Good afternoon. I'm Barbara Green, and I'm the founder of Homeless Empowerment Program. A little correction there. We started in late 60s, 70s, out of the Tabernacle, Everybody's Tabernacle, and housed a family first. My husband bought a house on Garden Avenue, which we still house in, and put the family up and supported them. He and the church did for about 3 years, and all of a sudden word got out that Tabernacle would help people. And so from there, it just ended up becoming a shelter in different pieces of property that we owned. And then in 1986, we decided that we needed to go public because we needed money for rehab and so forth and run the program. And so we became a 501c3. And I'm sure that you guys remember Roland Fox.
Right, yes.
He's the one that helped us create the 501c3 paperwork.
Good. And when it started out, did you think you'd have the, I guess, the budget you have now and the volume you have now? Do you ever think it'd get this big?
No, George, we actually didn't think at all in those sense. We were just so busy figuring out how we could, you know, make the people's lives better and creating programs through the, we just kept growing without it really even thinking about it. We were lucky that my husband was a builder and made good money, and he would buy up the property and we'd build on it or rehab the buildings that were there, so we just were able to keep increasing it. And at the time, when we were running down on the church, there was no salaries paid to anyone that was in the church, pastor, any of them, and so the money was going towards the shelter. So then, we, you know, fortunate in a lot of ways like that.
Did you start, or you started, you had the Tabernacle, which
yes.
was one building,
mm-hmm.
and then you had the house, which was one building.
Mm-hmm. And then Well, for instance, we own 9 houses on Garden Avenue, so you can see them.
Now, today.
Yes, and more around the neighborhood. But we also, the buildings that were around our property now, we kept purchasing the land or buildings and recreating housing there.
So before we get too far into it, let's let Ashley introduce herself and tell what she does. When did you come on? What have you done in the process in the years that you've been there and kind of get it to where it is now?
So my name's Ashley. I'm the current president and CEO of HEP. I've been with the organization for about 6 years, started out in the marketing department, grew into the development department, and then I've held my current role for the past 2 years. But to kind of answer your first question about our name change and rebranding, that occurred probably about 3 or 4 years ago now. And the reason we changed the name is because back when the organization first began, they were only providing emergency services. So it was really short-term housing, food, clothing, just the basic necessities. And thankfully, Barb and her husband had the vision to realize that those things were not helping the population that we're serving. They really needed long-term support and things that would resolve the issues that were leading to their homelessness in the first place. So that's kind of where we are now. We really do empower the homeless to kind of take control of their own lives and future. And we do that through the support services that we offer on campus.
Give me an idea. How big are you now? Give me some statistics.
We've got 8 acres in the Greenwood neighborhood in Clearwater, and we provide housing for just under 400 people daily. So our population includes about a third veterans. We house 110 vets daily, between 80 and 100 children. We have a significant population of families living on our campus.
And you have a dining room.
Do
you feed all those people in the dining room?
We do. It's about 115,000 meals throughout the course of the year. We do breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We supplement a large portion of the produce that we serve in the kitchen with a garden that we have on campus. So that's part of the acreage that we gave you. We provide all of that on campus.
You also have a thrift store. I know for years, even in the very beginning, the thrift store was an important part of HEP because we used to come and give things all the time. I remember that. Well,
we built the new one on Betty Lane. You know, right. We had some couple that were existing in the past. When we built the new one, we built it on Betty Lane. And, of course, people said, why build it where there's no traffic? But we built it for a different reason. We wanted to be able the clients to go down and get the things that they need. Mm-hmm. And it's given to them free. And so every year we tally that up. So we give back out of the thrift store about $70,000 to $80,000 worth of clothing and shoes and different things that the client gets. Donors love to hear that because, you know, when they give you stuff, they like to say, we want this to go for the client. And it surely does there.
I know the Clearwater Police Department, I think actually some of the other departments in the county have a relationship with HEP. Tell me how that works.
They've always been involved with us from day one years ago, and we even have the police chief on our board. That's the chief for St. Pete. He was Clearwater, Tony Holloway, and he's on our board. So we're involved in that way, but we're also involved with the officers and stuff. They're very familiar with HEP. When we created the Pinellas County Coalition for the Homeless and the Homeless Leadership Board, we came up with the idea then of having an officer with a social worker in the car going around, and if they saw homeless, they could bring them to our shelter or to others like Safe Harbor and different ones like that.
What other services do you guys focus on empowering the homeless in Clearwater to actually help, and what's the goal of the HEP?
To have this shelter the last shelter they're ever in.
Right, meaning empower them to go out and start living on their own and not being homeless anymore and
yes.
Producing on their own, having a place to live on their own, having a job. What do you guys do to help them get into job placement, things like that?
We have a workforce development center, so we focus on resume building. A lot of our residents have not had to apply for a job online before, so we help them to do that. We're also working with the Pinellas County School System to provide adult education opportunities on campus.
Awesome.
That's all within walking distance of all of our housing. In addition to that, we do comprehensive health care. So we have on-site medical care, mental health counseling, substance abuse treatment. We have child care. We provide before and after school care as well as a summer camp because a lot of our families are working. So that helps to kind of fill in where they may need help with child care.
We have a health and wellness center.
Do you still have the dentist office?
Yes.
We're actually a dentist actually on site to do dental work
Well,
as well.
That started in 1994.
Yeah.
and it's been there ever since. We have over 30 dentists that come monthly, and then we have last year we did well, 2019 we went over the $1 million
valued at of dental services dental care, that we provide. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's a full service dental clinic. They do everything from braces to crowns. To, I mean, braces, crowns, hood, root canals, everything.
Wow, that's awesome.
How does someone get involved with HEP?
Either what do you
volunteering
mean?
Oh, volunteering. Or, right. How does that? Tell me how someone can do that if they want to volunteer and help.
They just need to let us know. We have a volunteer coordinator. We handle about 2,000 volunteers throughout the course of the year, so there's plenty of opportunity to get involved. And in areas ranging from the dining hall to our maintenance team, they can volunteer.
In the office.
In the office, at marketing events. So, again, there's plenty of opportunity. They just need to let us know.
How about if they want to donate? How do they do that?
They can talk to Barbara or myself, and we also accept donations online. Our website is hepempowers.org, and there's a donate tab, and they can go there and make a contribution.
What kind of events do you guys put on to kind of either get the community involved, get sponsors involved, get volunteers involved? You guys have a lot of events, don't you, that you put on throughout the year?
Yeah, we have one primary fundraiser, which is our golf tournament. Mm-hmm. It's every October. This year we're holding it at Innisbrook on the Copperhead course. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's, I believe, the second Friday in October. And then throughout the year, we have what we call third-party events, which is like when a restaurant or business will host an event on behalf of HEP to raise funds. So we're very thankful for those, of course.
And we encourage groups that have meetings to meet there at HEP in the boardroom, and we'll get served lunch, and they can do the tour, too, while they're there or learn about HEP. So we have a lot of people that do get involved from that, like Walmart. Years ago, we had the 21 managers come there, and it's and now they're one of our biggest donors.
How does someone who's looking for the help HEP provides get involved with HEP?
It's largely word of mouth. Okay. We're very well known among the homeless population for providing support services and housing. So we're not ever really in a position where we need to do outreach to get. Mm-hmm. Individuals
probably have more than you need.
We do, yeah, right. Yeah. So hopefully in the next year or two, we're actually going to be looking at expanding our campus by another 3 to 4 acres to provide family housing, because we're seeing that that's where there's a significant need right now. There's a lack of affordable housing in our area, and unfortunately we turn away hundreds of families a year because we simply don't have bed space.
And when you don't, even if you're not able to house the family or the person that needs help, do you still provide other services to them if they're not actual residents of the HEP? Is there other things they can be involved in, or is it all just for the people staying on the property?
The services that we provide are primarily for the residents that we're serving directly. If somebody does come to our campus and we don't have housing available, we'll work with that individual to find them placement in the community. So we try not to put anyone in a position where they're forced to go elsewhere.
You know, one of the areas, and I've been involved with HEP for a long time, but I was really excited because you've gotten into the veterans. I mean, you've really started to help veterans a lot in the last couple of years. Give me an outline. What's really going on with the veterans at HEP, and why did you see that need?
Well, we've housed veterans the whole time that we've been involved, which is about 45 years, but the volume has increased much in the last 10, 15 years. And the services that we provide are like, of course, the shuttle that goes back and forth that takes them to appointments daily. We have activity directors that work with them. We have a clubhouse that has a fitness center, Wi-Fi, big TV, so forth. We built 32 new apartments about 3 years ago now, a little bit longer, that targeted just Iraq and Afghanistan vets. We deal a lot with PTSD. We have counseling on site, and then the VA, of course, provides counseling there too. They're working with them daily and getting them involved. We encourage them to volunteer there at the program. They volunteer in the kitchen. They volunteer on the grounds, or you know, even in the office around and so forth. So they keep them busy. And the young, the ones that are coming back, you deal with them differently than you do the Vietnam and the Gulf Wars and so forth. They like having their own place in their own apartment. They're not so much as community, you know, where they you house them together.
When you built these buildings, that was that's an interesting kind of an interesting story. It was kind of a dream.
Yes.
To have housing specifically designed for veterans.
Yes.
And you dealt with the VA, and you dealt with a lot of government agencies in order to be able to provide that.
Yes.
How kind of tell us about that struggle, because I know it took a long time.
Well, we when we knew that we wanted to target the Iraq and Afghanistan vets, we visited the VA, and they told us that they were different. They didn't like to be in the community where the other war vets were. And so we set out to raise money to build those 32 apartments. And my brother-in-law, Bruce Fife, at that time was chairman of the board, and he had lost a son, a Marine, in Iraq. And he spearheaded a campaign, and we raised that money with different groups, including the city and the county, and private donations, a lot of private donations. In the clubhouse, we could not get any type of government funds for that. We, of course, the HEP donors and the new people that got involved built that. It makes a difference. If you've never been to HEP, you should, because we're very clean, very, to tell the truth, we don't look like what most people think homeless shelters look like. Our goal was always to give that person that came, the client, nothing we wouldn't eat, nothing we wouldn't wear, and nothing we would live in. And that's a large goal for a shelter. And I say that because you never have to be ashamed to say this is where we're housing people.
And you still live on campus, don't you?
I live next door. Yes.
She's got about a 10-foot walk from her house to my office, so it's like right across the way.
Spend a lot on gas.
So what does the future look like? Where do you think? Well, I know she talked about acquiring three or four more acres. What do you? Is that housing that you're going to put?
Yeah, that'll be affordable housing for low-income families. So we're hoping to house up to 40 individual families there, in apartment-style housing. So it'll be similar to the permanent family housing that we have on campus now, just expanded.
So what does the timeline actually look like when you call it permanent family housing? What is your plan for when somebody shows up to when they're able to make it on their own?
The plan is always to get them out into independent housing. Permanent supportive housing allows them to continue to access the support services that we have on campus, but in a more independent fashion. So by that point, they're paying a portion of their income, if they have it, to HEP as rent, which helps us to cover some of those support service expenses, but they still have access to regular case management, school supplies for their kids, the after-school program, things that they need to kind of make ends meet, and then we continually work with them until they're at the point where they're ready to be on their own in the community.
We always say that HEP is like a big wheel. We have emergency shelter, they come in, individuals 90 days, families 120 days, and then we have transitional housing, which is 6 months to 18 months, and then of course permanent housing. If they qualify for the transitional housing, they can go in there from emergency shelter. And when she talked about the rents, it's 30% of their income in those programs. So it's not a lot of funds from the client. It's some, but it allows them to be able to save money if they have jobs and stuff like that for getting into apartments on their own, too. And a lot of the landlords surprisingly work with us. They trust HEPs because we're grooming those clients to make it work when they move out in the community.
The vetting process, basically, of the HEP, right?
And so, you know, and that helps us, the clients find places that they can move into. And a lot of them move in together. They, you know, the buddy system to afford, you know, to live outside in the community. The other thing that we do for the families, and actually you can tell them about that, how we track and follow them after they leave, even the individuals.
Right. So all of our families, after they exit our program, we follow them for up to 2 years to make sure that they're maintaining their housing in the community. That way, if they're on the cusp of becoming homeless again, we can intervene and prevent that from happening.
And try to help them stay afloat there as opposed to getting back into
the system.
Right,
yes.
Right. Yep. Okay, very cool. Thank you guys so much for coming on. It was a lot of fun. We learned
a
lot. I think anybody can get behind a place that whose slogan is helping people help themselves, right? So yes. Thank you guys so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Feel off? Tired? Moody? You might be missing minerals because 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps support energy, mood, and immunity from the inside out. Go to tracemineralz.com and feel the difference minerals make.